Welcome to the Intertidal Talks podcast. I am Kendra, marine biologist and your host. This podcast is meant to teach, inform, and entertain you about all things marine science and conservation. If you are a marine scientist or advocate with a story to share, you can contact me at intertidaltalks@gmail.com. Want to join our marine science community? Join us at patreon.com/kendi_marinebio. Hello, everybody. Today, it is just going to be me on the podcast, and I am going to be talking to you about eco-anxiety and dealing with eco-hypocrisy. Now, this topic was voted on by my patrons, so if you ever want to vote on what you want to hear on this podcast, you can join my Patreon. There is a $1 tier, and you have complete access to voting for an episode. And it was between this or invasive species. And I will say, I was kind of hoping invasive species would win, but this one won out in the long run. So I have some articles pulled up I'm going to look at and talk about, and then talk about my own experiences with eco-anxiety and more so eco-hypocrisy. And so eco-anxiety refers to persistent worries about the future of Earth and the life it shelters. We know that we are amid a climate crisis, climate change emergency. We're kind of past the point of, I think a lot of people are past the point where they feel hope. And that kind of causes this anxiety tunnel, essentially. There are people who are hopeful. There are ways that we can start to help our planet again. But with the rate, I think that administration seem to be going, I think a lot of people just feel hopeless. So there's a lot of distress and anxiety that comes from it. It is a totally normal response. Anxiety is normal as well. It's like a fight or flight survival instinct that we have. And especially when the threat is very real. Climate change is a very real threat, whereas a lot of anxiety, I know for me, comes from like misreading a text or something. So climate anxiety can be very, 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 very real feeling because it is a very real fear. But that doesn't diminish other feelings of anxiety, just to clear that up. But what I have found interesting is when researching this, I found like major health websites have like a diagnosis for this, which I find really interesting. There are issues linked specifically to eco-anxiety, such as existential dread, which again is just kind of anxiety, even some signs of PTSD if you experience the effects of climate change, feelings of depression, obsessive thoughts about the climate, but you can also have sleep problems, appetite changes, and difficulty concentrating. And all that is just correlation with anxiety, but people like eco-anxiety is a real problem for some people. And it's kind of crazy because, I feel it to a certain extent. I wouldn't say it's like an everyday feeling. I do tend to be on the more hopeful side on like my individual actions and what I do to try and make a change in the world. You know, hashtag be the change. But of course, for some people, that's not the reality. And even like your own daily actions, while I may do a lot of good things in my day, I also still have habits that hurt the environment, which is where the eco-hypocrisy comes in. And eco-hypocrisy can really impact the eco-anxiety. Like you using plastic or using meat, even eating meat. That's one that like you haven't cut out dairy or meat completely. And that can like add such dread and anxiety. And I think a healthy way to kind of combat that is to know that we're all eco-hypocrites. That's what something that I've seen a lot of other like environmental influencers post about and share about, which I love because I'm an eco-hypocrite. I try to share it now as well. I go to Starbucks, I go to Tim Hortons and get a drink, and there's not really refill options or not refill options, but like refillable cup options right now, which is really sad because, you know, there have been studies that have shown that using a refillable cup does not increase your chance of getting COVID, but I totally understand why a lot of chains just outright don't do it, because there is always still that chance that something could happen if they just aren't being clean, if they aren't being cautious. But then I find it kind of ironic because there's places like in Idaho where I went when we were driving up to Canada for moving. We went to a Cafe Rio because there's not Cafe Rio in Canada. So I had to have some. And while we were there, the employees were not wearing masks. There were some that were just not wearing masks at all. There were some that had it pulled down. And like they're serving my food. It wasn't guests. I get that like you can't control guests, but it was the employees. So from that standpoint, I get why a lot of chains and places just aren't offering refills, because you can't control everyone in the situation. Because in a perfect situation, yeah, nothing's going to get passed with a refill cup. But so I totally understand that. And I still want to support. There are small businesses I've supported that don't do refills still. And then when we're driving, when you're out, and sometimes you just want to get a Starbucks or you want to get a Tim Hortons, you want to go to McDonald's, those kind of things. And that's totally normal and okay. And I actually, there's this one eco influencer I love, Shell Biz Life. I'll put some of her stuff down in the description. But she said in one of her videos talking about when you switch to a low waste lifestyle, that a lot of people will keep from it because, like, I think the example she gave was with plants. Like, plants come in plastic. What are those called? Pots. Plants come in plastic pots. I don't want to give that up. How do you shop for plants without doing that? And she was like, I don't. I get the plastic pot. And she basically says, I love plants and I'm not going to give up something I love because of that plastic, because it brings her joy. And then she finds ways to reuse those pots, which she's like, that's my solution. I am, of course, buying plastic and buying this plant, but I also can't not do things I don't love and enjoy. And that's something like buying plants. Is that necessary for life? No, but that's something she loves. And she finds a way to repurpose those pots. But she's also not limiting the joy of life. And I think that's really important. There are some things that we do as hobbies that I think people would kind of be like, that's inherently wasteful. I think one big thing there's a lot of small businesses that make resin art, and resin is getting a lot of flack, and I understand why, but for some people, like, making that art is a joy. Making that art leads to people maybe being aware of an issue and maybe them having an income, and that's where I think it's a thing in moderation. A lot of the big issues we have with the environment is like over-consumerism versus like plastic inherently is bad, because plastic is necessary in some areas. I think about my lab work, for example. There's a lot of plastic waste in labs, but in that sense, plastic's really good for doing a lot of lab work and a lot of other safety measures. And on top of that, there are things people do, like I said, where they find joy buying a plant that comes in a plastic pot. You don't just have to like cut out all the joy in your life when you're switching to a low waste lifestyle. And does buying that plastic pot technically make you an eco hypocrite? And that's something I think a lot of people need to be more okay with, is messing up and being an eco-hypocrite, because we're all eco-hypocrites. I promise you, my day-to-day, I am an eco-hypocrite. I just got like 5 packages in the mail in like the last week. And a lot of that could be argued, oh, so you're not really eco-friendly. I've had people talk to me about how I have an Amazon book list with marine science books that I recommend to people, and how that's not very eco-friendly of me because it's Amazon and I'm supporting Amazon. And I have that book list because a lot of people use Amazon. A lot of people can't step away from Amazon, and there's no shame in that. There's no shame in your eco-conscious path in whatever you do. If you're just cutting out in your bathroom routine, cutting out plastic, cutting out particular chemicals, particular companies, that is a step. That is you moving towards a more eco-conscious life, and having this whole narrative of being either zero waste, completely eco-friendly, I think is irresponsible to be pushed on people. That's why I more so say that I try to live low waste, low impact. But at the same time, I understand there are areas of my life where I'm not living completely low waste and low impact. One would be my kitchen in terms of food. We haven't completely cut out meat and dairy. I've cut out a lot of meat and dairy. But in terms of eggs is something, I love eggs so much. And I would love to get to a point where when I have a home to have chickens and source my own eggs, or maybe be near a farm where there are eggs that I can just get local eggs, I think that that is a great way to have a low impact but still keeping with something that you love. And for some people, that's also going to be meat. I would love to get to a point where maybe we know exactly where our meat's coming from. We go and pick it up. And of course, I think it would cost more, but it's something I'd be willing to do. And we've cut out meat. We do tofu a lot now. We really enjoy doing tofu. There's a lot of alternatives we have switched to, but not in every part of my kitchen routine. Am I technically a lower impact? And I own up to it. That's totally okay. And that makes me, I think, technically an eco-hypocrite, quote unquote. But I think we're all eco-hypocrites. And I think that should be shown more. And I totally went off on eco-hypocrisy instead of the eco-anxiety. But the Washington Post has a really good article about eco-anxiety, and it's called The Environmental Burden of Gen Z. And basically talks about how these younger generations that are really learning about climate change as they're growing up are having to deal with with the stress that comes with it. I never learned about it growing up. And that may be part of, I think, the lack of it really hitting me sometimes, of this, what it seems like, the burden of it, the actual gravity of climate change. I learned about it in college, and just barely up until the last few years even. These kids are learning about it growing up. They are seeing these marches. They are seeing debates. They are seeing it getting brought up all over social media. And so it's really creating a real stress and a real fear, I think, in a lot of children and younger generations, not just children, generation. In Washington, the post-Kaiser Family Foundation poll of American teenagers released in September, 57% had said that climate change made them feel scared. 52% said it made them feel angry. Both higher rates than among adults. And just 29% of teens said they were optimistic. So 29% of teenagers were optimistic about climate change. And that's a wild, wild. I think just because you're really learning about it, really in it. Like the gravity of it, what impacts are going to come. And I don't know how classes are going. This is just what I kind of would correlate and assume is happening, and why it is a much bigger, I think, anxiety issue among younger people. And according to the National Institutes of Health, nearly 1 in 3 people ages 13 to 18 experience some kind of anxiety disorder as of 2018. And anxiety diagnoses in children's ages 6 to 17 increased 20% between 2007 and 2012. There's no one single cause, of course, but it is believed that the nonstop barrage of social media, heightened political climate, and the threat of school shootings are all stressors. And one of those, yes, would be climate change. Climate change is deeply rooted now in the political debate and on social media, with so many environmental influencers coming out and about and talking about this issue. One 18-year-old said, "It's like the ice caps are melting, and my hypothetical children will never see them, but also I have a calculus test tomorrow." Oh my gosh, that would stress me out so much. And I know that from my perspective of wanting to have kids, I do tend to get more eco-anxiety when I think about that, when I think about my children. When I think about me, I'm definitely like, I'm doing so much now. I'm fighting so, so loud now. But I start to think about when we start to have children, what my children will see, what my children will fight, if us now are able to get things implemented, to get things to change. And it does scare me when I start to think about that. I think that's where I feel the most eco-anxiety, is thinking about the future, thinking about my children's future. Will they see the southern resident killer whales as one? Will my work in conservation help that? Will they be able to go to Oahu and dive with the same sharks that I have been able to dive with? Or will we see something happen in terms of shark fishing bycatch issues? There are so many things, going back to Hawaii, even other species. There are so many land snails that go extinct. There are birds. There are the bats there are so many species in that environment that I've been able to see that my children very likely may never get to see. And that is kind of where I think I know actually that my biggest eco-anxiety comes from. But these kids are growing up in it, and I'd be really interested to know how many people that follow me that are younger and in school, either what you're learning about climate change and how that's played a role in your emotional health. Like, do you have eco-anxiety? It is something that I know is so real, but because either of my hopeful nature or just I'm still kind of forcing myself to come to the reality of climate change, because I'm still learning about it. I am not a perfect know-it-all about climate change. I learn something new about climate change all the time. I have books that I have in my to-be-read list about climate change, so I can learn more about it specifically, because I kind of know how it impacts certain species that I've worked with, certain environments I've worked around, but I know less about the total gravity, and it's something I really want to learn more about. So maybe I'll record this, and after I read more books, maybe I'll do a re-listen and re-record of how I feel now. But that is something I'm actively doing, and that I think is my duty to do, is to educate myself on this as much as I possibly can, and then to share that knowledge, especially for people that I know that aren't going to go out and read. And that's kind of why I do love my social media platform, is I know there are people that wouldn't know things without my posts. And it sparks an interest. And that goes for, I've seen it with sharks. I've had people message me about sharks. I've had people message me about them switching to so many different brands I've recommended, or just in general. I mean, just the other day, one of my best friends growing up messaged me about what kind of plastic-free soaps and hair bars to use, plastic-free lotions. And I was like, oh my goodness, like, it's always so fun when someone reaches out and asks that, because I'm more than happy to always just give you a list. And I think a lot of that, I always get my hope built up. I get so excited because individual actions do make a change, but we all know, maybe you don't know, but most of pollution is caused by major companies and organizations. And if they are not forced to change, it seems like our little changes are insignificant. And they work hand in hand. Your changes do make a difference. A lot of that is because of your dollar, making sure your money is not going to those organizations. That's the thing I always say, is that you can vote with your money. You stop supporting, for example, there was that Cancel Coke campaign that Kate Dobler did, Plastic Kate, where for the month of February, don't buy Coke. Coke does a lot of good things, but overall, Coke is one of the top plastic polluters. And not buying from them for a week, letting the numbers show, letting them see their profits get lower in that month, and then aligning it with this campaign of Cancel Coke, that sends a message to them. And that is why so many organizations are important. Following up on those things, not buying certain things, can make a huge difference. Because these organizations, these companies, a lot of times they will not change until they see a financial fall. I mean, I would take SeaWorld as a pretty good example. When Blackfish came out, there was such a push. They saw a drop in attendance to the point where they no longer do their breeding program. And that was a step in a good direction. When the money stopped coming, they were kind of forced to make a change. And on the note of SeaWorld, there is a Blackfish podcast episode dropping on Monday. So stay tuned. Sorry, had to plug. But that's just a great example of where the money goes, business flows. Depending on what you do with your dollar, that's where you align yourself. And that's why a lot of people don't do Amazon, because they don't agree with Amazon. That's why a lot of people don't buy from Pepsi, don't buy from certain brands that are just shady, all that kind of stuff. That's why your dollar speaks hugely. And it's so important when you are looking to buy things that you are looking at who you're buying from. If you can, another big thing, if you have the privilege to do so, it is definitely a privilege to be able to find an alternative in a lot of cases. Because a lot of times the low impact, the more eco-conscious items are going to cost more, because it costs more to ethically produce an item, ethically sell a product that ensures people are not being taken advantage of all throughout the production of that item. So I don't know how to end this. I really don't when I record by myself. But yeah, I'm going to link the things that I mentioned in the description, and I would love to hear your inputs on eco-anxiety. If you are listening to this podcast, I would love it if you shared it to your Instagram story and tagged me and shared your input on eco-anxiety, your input on eco-hypocrisy. If you can't do that, then go ahead and just send me a DM talking about eco-anxiety and eco-hypocrisy that you've experienced. But I would love to see other people's input, how other people feel, your own thoughts, maybe even how you're making little changes in your life or big changes. I think one change that I have really fallen in love with, again, I saw from Shell Biz Life, was to write to companies every month as a New Year's resolution about, and companies you like, with products that you like from them, and asking them to make a swap to an more eco-friendly option. And the example she always gives is the Native deodorant. She loved Native deodorant, and she would write to them all the time about how they should switch to the biodegradable packaging. And they did eventually. And that was extremely happy because she didn't want to stop buying that product, but she knew there was a more eco-friendly solution for them to do and for them to make that swap. And they ended up doing it. And they are phasing into using biodegradable packaging for their deodorants. And that just shows that one person, multiple people writing letters can make a big difference. And so I'm highlighting companies in my life that I really like, but I would like for them to be better by being plastic free, and, or maybe not plastic free, but less plastic either, or even cutting out a certain ingredient that is linked to exploitation of people in a different country, and how they can move forward and do something different. And I think that's a great way that you can take time out of your day to think about research solutions and write to a company to show them, I want to keep buying from you, but I want it to be better. I want you to be better so the world can be better. And I think I just think it's beautiful. I really am in love with that solution. It's so powerful, but it's so little. And I just love it. And so that's one thing. Besides that, I think dealing with eco-anxiety, I would always say go talk to a counselor. And I think finding friends, finding people with similar experiences to talk to, and finding things to be hopeful in. Now, I think going to a counselor is number one, because I cannot tell you by any means how to treat that kind of an issue, because I am not a professional in that area. I know for me, I will just kind of have to not think about it. And that's where I don't want to say ignore it, but I just kind of move past it in my day, because I don't want to get that crippling fear. But I know that for a lot of people that is not possible, especially with the gravity that it is at. So I would definitely say look into talking to a professional about it. What else can you do? Find a community around you to talk about it with, friends and all that. I think maybe even finding literature. I'm sure there are a lot of great books that talk about the hopeful side and what you can do. I think that also helps. And if you have any solutions, include that in the DM to me, or anything you do in your personal life. Maybe not like solutions. Obviously you can't just solve this overnight, but anything maybe you have done personally, or you've had a friend do, DM that to me, or maybe add it to your story and tag me, and I would love to hear and see it. I would love to see what has worked for people individually. And yeah, I think that's the end of this episode about eco-anxiety and eco-hypocrisy. If you want to vote on an episode in the future, join my Patreon. And the next episode of Intertidal Talks will be out on Monday at about 3 p.m. And it will be all about Blackfish. I will be kind of diving deep into the film and exposing a lot of the untruths that are portrayed in that film and the issues I have with that film. And then I'll give it like an overall rating of what I think about it. And at the same time that day, there will be a new episode of Marine Biology Movie Club with me and Taylor KC, my friend on Instagram. And I will share it everywhere, but we will also be talking about Blackfish in that video. So stay tuned for both of those. And it has been a pleasure talking to all of you. I hope you enjoy listening. I know I really enjoy sitting here talking to my microphone. And I will see you next time.